Cruise to Hell. It's a true story, a narrative drama by Millie Keeve, read by Millie. How do you share the unshareable? How do you tell a story out loud that it's even hard to think about? I wonder why sometimes I need to share this, but out of bad things can come good. Maybe opening the eyes of others can save them from the experiences my family and I had some 25 years ago. Today you are going to be witness. You will be family. You will be included in a story that before now only my closest friends have known in detail. The story is told in third person. It's the only way I can share it. Imagine a family, a Jewish family, a mother and father, both working hard to do the best for their four children. Father, aged 51, has given up the security of a senior lecturing post to run the family property management business. He is caring, loving, hard-working, maybe a little laid back. Mother, aged 45, has finally left the family business to pursue her dream, working as an actress and producer. She would not be called laid back. Eldest son, aged 22, has replaced his mother in the family business. It's a far cry from his college years, spent photographing bands and supporting Rock Against Racism events, often dressed as a punk. Middle son, aged 17, having played Sade's hands in her pop video, her first pop video, Your Love is King, he was doing the card tricks, has decided to become a professional magician. Youngest son, aged 10, is a sensible young man with a talent for music, but he prefers listening to the news rather than to pop songs. Only daughter, aged 20, unlike younger brother, she loves listening to pop music, attending concerts and films, especially those starring John Travolta. She is the linchpin of the family, loving and caring. Her warmth and tenderness is demonstrated by hugs, kisses, providing a cup of tea in bed for mother and father most mornings, and remembering everyone's birthday. She has a wicked sense of humour, as does middle brother. They're like a double act. She calls them the twinlets. She is also helping him develop and rehearse a Las Vegas-style magic act with exciting musical backing. Am I glamorous enough? She asks. She certainly is. They have a lot of fun, and without expectation of being placed, enter and win a national Young Magicians competition, as well as being runners-up in the Young Magician of the Year competition. Well, it comes to March 1985. Daughter has been working happily in a travel agency, but persuaded by her friends and workmates and supported by her family to go to university, she embarks on a joint history and English degree. The required reading is huge. She develops a stomach problem that concerns her mother, so they go to see a gastroenterologist. He diagnoses Crohn's disease, later found to be a misdiagnosis, and he prescribes 3 grams of sulfasalazine daily, 6 tablets a day. He tells her she will need the drugs for life, even if symptoms subside. Her dad takes these pills, and he has inflammatory bowel disease, so no one's over-concerned. But in retrospect, it was a massive dose for a petite girl weighing just 7 stones. She starts having terrifying, hallucinatory nightmares and runs from her bedroom distressed, sobbing in terror, having dreamt about monsters that appear to be there even when she wakes. Could it be the sulfasalazine causing this? The gastroenterologist denies nightmares can be a side effect and urges her to continue taking the drugs. Just keep her on the sulfasalazine. Don't rock the boat. That was an ironic comment, considering, as it was April 1985, holiday time, and a Mediterranean cruise on board the Canberra has been planned. The day of departure arrives. Mother and father and three of their children set off for Tilbury. Parents are looking really forward to a break. Eldest son is to stay behind to keep an eye on the business. Daughter is in a bright mood. Middle son is taking his magic tricks, and youngest son plans to play the piano in a talent show. The family settle into their cabins and the routine of being on board a cruise ship with games, sports events and ports of call to look forward to. However, daughter's excitement turns to a strange tension and sensitivity, especially towards her mother. She reacts badly when a flower she has placed on the door handle of her parents' cabin, as a sweet gesture, goes unnoticed. The flower has fallen to the floor, and her mother has not seen it. Then, during dinner on gala night, daughter, in a high mood, she looks beautiful, dressed in a Hawaiian outfit, her dark hair shining, and a red flower painted on her cheek. Her prospective date with the young officer is not mentioned, but adds to the excitement of the evening. Then, suddenly, she accuses her mother of being unfair to youngest brother over a trivial matter. Mother is concerned and visits the ship's doctor. "My daughter's wound up like a spring ready to snap. It's not like her. She's taking a drug called sulfasalazine. Could that cause changes in mood?" Without any reference to a drug side effects manual, the doctor says, "I can't say. Bring her to see me."
"No, I can't. She's very sensitive just now. It would only upset her more if I suggest she needs to see a doctor."
"Well, there's nothing I can do if I can't see her."
So with heavy heart, mother returns to her cabin. Next morning, Canberra docks in Palma, Mallorca. Mother and father look forward to a day exploring the town. But middle son is concerned about his sister. "She's crying in her cabin. I think you'd better go and see what's wrong. She's really upset." Mother goes to daughter's cabin. She is sobbing on the bed with covers pulled up over her head.
"What's the matter?
Go away and leave me alone."
Mother's bewildered and she walks away along the corridor around the deck, then returns.
"Will you come ashore with us to see Palma?"
"If I do, I'll go with my friends."
And her daughter slams the cabin door shut in mother's face. Now, as worried as middle son, she finds her husband.
"I don't know what's wrong. Look, I'll stay on board. You go ashore with the boys. There's no point in you all hanging around here."
Mother paces the deck, then returns to the cabin. This time, it is empty. Daughter's handbag is still there, and her passport. Confused but confident, daughter does not intend to go ashore and is simply somewhere on board, maybe with new friends. Mother goes for a walk. It's time to leave Palma, and the family stand on deck as the ship sails from the port. The sun is setting, a clear sky and smooth waves. It is a beautiful, peaceful departure. The dinner gong is heard and the family head for the dining room, expecting to see daughter at the table, but there's no sign of her. They make a tannoy announcement calling her to dinner. This brings only a response from a young man to middle son.
"I saw your sister sitting in a cafe on the harbour by the ship, just before we sailed."
Middle brother is devastated and runs sobbing to his parents with this news. Parents rush to see the captain and first officer.
"Our daughter's not on board. We need to get to her immediately. She must be ill," says father.
"Please find a helicopter to take me ashore," mother desperately pleads.
"She probably met a boy and ran off with him. We see it all the time," replies the first officer.
"No, she is ill. It's totally out of character for her to behave like this. She would never leave her passport or handbag to go ashore. If she was thinking straight, she must be ill."
The captain and the first officer are intransigent. The thought of 2 days at sea before docking in Lisbon is unbearable.
Parents are full of fear for their daughter's safety, imagining her alone on the dock as the sun goes down, with a walk past a naval yard, the only way into the town. She's a vulnerable, sick girl alone.